I want to say I am very clear-eyed about the hurdles to finally closing Guantanamo. It's been clear that the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay does not advance our national security.
Milwaukee Police Chief Edward Flynn.
We have been very gratified once again at the response of community members to the messages being sent by the faith community as well as various community leaders.
So it's not a situation where we're saying everything is great. But again, up to this point, the signs have been very encouraging for tonight.
We can capture terrorists, protect the American people, and when done right, we can try them and put them in our maximum security prisons, and it works just fine.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09. Today is Tuesday. It's August 16th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day, and a lot going on today. Some earnings out today, some big reports, and we'll also be talking a little bit later on about some alternatives to those expensive SUVs. You know, SUVs, these small SUVs are the craze these days. But wouldn't you like to find something a little less expensive than the most popular ones? We'll help you do that coming up in the second half of the show. First half of the show, we're going to be talking about the impact Kickstarter is having on the economy. But first, to the WGN Market Desk, and here's the overnight intel. Asian stocks, markets drifted sideways as the price of oil took a breather from a three-day rally. Investors digesting mixed reports on the health of the global economy, awaiting U.S. data later in the week, including some important inflation data. Also, the minutes of the Federal Reserve come out tomorrow as well. Global markets have seen small gains and losses as investors digest those reports. For instance, overseas in Asia, the Asian markets are generally lower, with the Nikkei leading the way off almost 1.5%, off 273 points. In Europe, most of the indices are lower as well. Leading the way there appears to be the DAX and the CAC leading the way with almost 0.5% loss there, with just a couple of percentage points to go to that level. Here in the United States, Dow futures are pointing toward a lower open on Wall Street later, off about 11 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Here's what's going on today. The federal government offers three separate looks today at the U.S. economy. The Labor Department releases the Consumer Price Index this morning, and the Commerce Department will release housing starts. The Federal Reserve will release industrial production news. Meantime, the final reports of earnings seasons are trickling in. Home Depot is first off the way, and their numbers are just in. Home Depot earnings $1.97 per share, which matches expectations. They had a good last quarter. Apparently, lots of people were doing work on their home. And Home Depot earnings just in this morning to the WGN Market Desk. So, have you given to Kickstarter lately? You wouldn't believe the impact that you are having on the economy. We'll get into some of the numbers quickly here with a spokesperson for Kickstarter, one of the main writers and spokespeople for Kickstarter. Justin Kaczmark is with us via Skype this morning. And this study has been done by an independent university. The University of Pennsylvania conducted this survey, so we'll lead off with that. But, Justin, are you surprised at some of these results, which show Kickstarter producing hundreds of thousands of jobs across the economy?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, Kickstarter's sort of been around for 7 years now, and we've known anecdotally that it's had a tremendous impact on the lives of creators and in culture in general. But we never had any research done that sort of gave it shape. And so about a year ago, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, Professor Ethan Mollick, approached us and said he was studying Kickstarter and crowdfunding more broadly and wanted to look at the stats behind the site and survey creators and the community and get a sense of that impact. So we worked with him, and he did this independent study, and he surveyed tens of thousands of creators and backers of the projects that those creators created. And he just recently released the results of that report, and he found some interesting things. He found that Kickstarter sort of created a number of different avenues towards economic impact, and he measured that in different ways. One of them was that the Kickstarter community has created about 8,800 new companies and new nonprofits. And from those companies and nonprofits, about 30,000 full-time jobs have been created. One of the interesting things is the number of part-time jobs that have been created, or temporary workers, as he puts it. And he found that about 283,000 part-time collaborators are being paid or have been paid because of Kickstarter projects. And that's really interesting to us because, you know, Kickstarter is a place where creative projects come to life, and a lot of the work that goes into bringing a creative project to life traditionally goes unpaid. You know, if you think about editors and illustrators, film crew or backing musicians, these are jobs that sometimes go unpaid, or maybe you barter with friends of yours who can have these specific skill sets. But that's not the case with Kickstarter. With what he found in the UPenn study was that Kickstarter enabled creators to pay collaborators who maybe would not have been able to been paid otherwise.
Via Skype.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stocks mostly fell today, despite yesterday's new record closings on Wall Street. Investors were digesting mixed reports on the health of the global economy and awaiting U.S. data later in the week. In Australia, the world's biggest miner, BHP Billiton, has posted a record $6.4 billion loss for 2015 through 2016. Experts say China's launch of the first quantum satellite will push forward the worldwide effort to develop the ability to send communications that can't be penetrated by hackers. Google's video chatting app Duo, being released today as a free service for phones running on Google's Android operating system as well as Apple iPhones. Stocks closed higher Monday on Wall Street. The Dow gained 59 points. The S&P finished 6 points higher. The NASDAQ was up 29 points. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 518. We're discussing with Kickstarter a new study out that shows the impact it's having on the economy. For instance, total pledges to Kickstarter more than $2 billion. Also, the number of successfully funded projects, 110,000. Here are the real kickers, though. The number of jobs created in the economy, part-time, full and part-time jobs, hundreds of thousands of part-time jobs, more than 28,000 full-time jobs in the economy. And we're on this morning with Justin Kaczmark. He's with Kickstarter. Justin, what kinds of projects did the study find are being, and you know this by being there, Kickstarter, are the most popular and being funded the most?
Kickstarter largely is for one-off creative projects. If you think about the overall Kickstarter universe, you're looking at filmmakers and musicians, authors and artists. But you also find sometimes those one-off projects become so successful that they have a life of their own afterward. We've had a number of really notable businesses or companies that have gotten their start off of Kickstarter, both small and large. Maybe one of the most notable ones is Oculus Rift, which got its start on Kickstarter a few years back and then later on was acquired by Facebook for $2 billion. And it really brought virtual reality to the masses for the first time and has broad creative applications for video gaming and art and journalism and movies and beyond. Another one that comes to mind is Pebble. Pebble really sort of introduced the idea of a smartwatch to the world. And later on, Apple even introduced their own smartwatch. So Pebble Technologies is a company that's based in California, and they have run three successful Kickstarter projects over the years, raising tens of millions of dollars and introducing an entire new category to the world. Those are two of the largest ones, but we've also had many, many smaller companies. You know, there's hundreds of food trucks and restaurants in local regions and neighborhoods across the country who have gotten their start on Kickstarter. There's also a lot of, individual entrepreneurs who, started with a Kickstarter project and were able to maybe leave their job and go out and strike out on their own full time. So it's a really diverse mix of people from around the world and the country that are, doing really interesting things across the creative universe.
And not only did they get help creating these companies, but 82% of them are still operating today. So that sort of defeats that idea that this is just a one and done kind of situation.
Yeah, I think I was surprised by that. If you think of, there's a lot of stats out there and it's hard to find the true stat, but you often hear that, new businesses go out of business within the first 5 years, and, the majority of them or, something like that. And I think that's intuitively it makes sense because it takes a lot of commitment and it's hard to start something new and Not everything, you know, goes as planned. And we know that failure exists on Kickstarter as well. But to hear from the professor at the University of Pennsylvania that, more than 80% of businesses that got their start on Kickstarter are still in existence is really promising.
The other part of this, too, is generally the number of jobs. You mentioned the full-time jobs, but the part-time jobs, the 283,000, those are huge numbers.
You know, it's surprising and it's heartening. Kickstarter itself, we're only a company of about 120 people or so. So, if you think about the scale of Kickstarter itself, this group of 120 or so people has sort of, leveraged itself to help others create jobs. And I don't know that, 30,000 jobs is huge on when it comes to economic impact studies. I'm sure there are other organizations or startups that have had a greater impact. I think we think of ourselves as a modest, having a modest impact, even though very meaningful. It's really fascinating. 30,000 new jobs, across the country and beyond.
These projects, are they specifically in one or two or three or four areas, or do they cover all kinds, do the whole gamut of different sorts of careers and projects?
Yeah, his study was across the entire Kickstarter community. So Kickstarter is a place where creators from across the creative landscape are funding ideas. It's 15 different categories from film and music and publishing and journalism and comics, games, design, technology, food is another big one, fashion. So it really is a broad spectrum of creative people from across the creative universe. And his study looked into all of them. And some of the categories, I think, had greater impact than others, often in terms of, job creation and maybe economic impact. But really, it is sort of a reflection of the entire community in aggregate.
He also sort of mapped out where some of the largest of these respondents were. You can see on a map that he's created some big circles, obviously the East Coast, the West Coast. But I noticed that Chicago is circled there as well.
Obviously, a lot of cities are sort of magnets for creative people. Oftentimes, we see that places with colleges and universities have a lot of innovation and a lot of young creators who are using Kickstarter to bring their ideas get off the ground. So it doesn't surprise me that Chicago has a large creative community that's sort of adopted Kickstarter with success.
The other part of this is the fact that there are so many of these people who used Kickstarter that are successful and still operating. It sort of says something about the general notion or the way that we normally think about people getting money to do stuff. Those people missed out on some obviously good opportunities.
So with Kickstarter, it's fascinating because this is not it does differ from traditional avenues of funding, but it's also very similar to a way that creators got funding, for centuries. It's very similar to the arts patronage model that authors and musicians and artists have been using for centuries. At the same time, it is very new. With Kickstarter, creators really enjoy the freedom to create on their own terms and the ability to build a community of support around an idea. And I think that speaks to a lot of people. You don't need to cede ownership of your idea in order to get funding for it, or at least you shouldn't have to. And for backers, the people that are supporting these projects across film and music and beyond, they really, I think what they're enjoying is the agency to voice the kind of culture that they want to see exist. They get a sort of a bit part in helping something come to life. It's not like a traditional consumer model where you're just sort of, going to a store and buying something that's off the shelf. You have a voice in deciding whether or not something gets to exist in the first place, which is really empowering. And then you also get a closer connection to the creative process. If you think about the people that are interested in, if they're a big fan of Spike Lee or if they're a huge fan of Apple products, a lot of times those people are first in line at the theater or, they're lined up at the Apple store before a new product is debuted. And with Kickstarter, it really opens up that whole creative process and you get a sort of a chance to see the creator behind the scenes. And I think that if culture beyond that would open up a little bit more, people would find tremendous value in that. People would find tremendous interest in seeing how, the products are designed at Apple's labs or R&D. offices, or, you know, to get a chance to get, you know, behind the scenes peek at how a filmmaker works is really valuable.
What advice would you give people based on your knowledge of the successful Kickstarter campaigns if they're getting, if thinking about launching one of their own? What are the secrets to success or the recipes to success?
You know, a few things. I think that, you know, number one, it takes tremendous courage to step out on a limb and create something new. And, you know, Kickstarter is inherently a very public platform. You have to really, open up about who you are and what your story is with the community, and then, you know, share that with the internet. And so I would say, you know, find that courage. And you can do that by going to Kickstarter itself and looking at other people who have been successful and how they've done it. I would also say, you know, maybe one of the first things you should do is explore and discover, you know, great projects on Kickstarter and back one and feel, get a sense for how it feels to get behind somebody else's idea and why you were inspired to do that, and maybe emulate that. Also, I'd say, you know, just pragmatically, Kickstarter is a very visual platform. So a big part of your project will be, you know, the imagery or the video. Projects that do have a video tend to be more successful. But you can sort of, you know, watch the videos of successful projects and get ideas for how to tell your story. I think that's a big part. And then maybe one last thing would be, you know, compelling rewards. You know, Kickstarter is a funding platform where in exchange for your pledge, you're going to get something in return. And a lot of the time that's, you know, like I said before, a closer connection to the creative process or the creator, but also early access to some really interesting rewards. So give some thought to how you're going to reward your audience and try to, you know, concisely and compellingly articulate that.
So what do you think the future holds for Kickstarter if you had to predict where the company might be 2, 3, 5 years from now?
I think Kickstarter is really just in the first chapter, and it's really interesting to watch it grow over the last 7 years. We've really become a place where independent creators and passionate backers are banding together to pursue daring ideas, and that has a really big impact on culture. You know, you start to see ideas that might not have had a chance to exist otherwise get funding and push culture in different interesting ways. And I think as that idea spreads, we're going to see Kickstarter be adopted in different corners of the creative landscape that it might not have been adopted by yet. And I think that's what we're most excited about.
That's Justin Kassmark with us via Skype this morning from Kickstarter, at Kickstarter. You can read more of the study. We'll post it with this on podcast online, but you can find more at Kickstarter.com. Justin Kassmark with the communications department at Kickstarter about the Kickstarter economy.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone. Tracking your teenager via GPS. As school gets underway, parents of teenagers may be dreading their kids beginning to drive. There are products out there allowing you to remotely keep an eye on your teen driver. One such product is a Moto Safety Teen GPS tracking device. Jessica Zeich is with Moto Safety at their headquarters in Missouri.
Parents can always know where their child's vehicle is. They just pull up their mobile app and they can see the vehicle right there on the screen.
The way it works, you click a small device into the car and that allows you to track movement and how your teen is driving. The parent can use a website or an app to see where their child has been in real time on a map. Plus, it gives you all kinds of data about their driving.
Speeding is number one, of course.
It'll also tell you if your teen has been rapidly accelerating or hitting the brakes hard. The cost of Moto Safety is about $80 and then $20 a month for tracking. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning and welcome back to The Opening Bell, 5:37. So the crossover craze is really hitting the auto market heavily this year. And if you can't afford one of those other big, giant, the popular one starts with an F, perhaps, there is an alternative for you. And we have with us on the phone today James Bell, who is the Director of Corporate Communications at Kia. And James, first, welcome to The Opening Bell.
Well, thank you. It's really great to be here.
So Kia always scores very well on the annual J.D. Power and Associates surveys. And they have presented, you have presented yourself as really a nice budget and family-friendly alternative to some of those other higher-priced, expensive crossover, SUV crossovers.
Well, yeah, what we see is that this trend is real. You know, there's a sense, I think, amongst the general public that fuel prices are going to be lower for the foreseeable future. So there's been this natural historical tendency for people to go towards larger vehicles when they don't see fuel prices being quite the threat that maybe have been in the past. We at Kia embrace that. We've got a couple fantastic crossover vehicles, the Sportage and the Sorento, which are, I mean, we just can't make them fast enough right now. But what I think is interesting is that there's a lot of buyers out there who maybe are just kind of blindly following that trend, going, assuming that if they need a vehicle that needs some, has some space for their stuff and their family, is going to get, you know, good enough fuel efficiency, not maybe top of the class, but good enough. They're just going to kind of blindly run off into that crossover space. But what's interesting is that today's modern sedans can really do much more than people really should get are giving them credit for. I mean, we recently took a run to a local Costco with one of our Sorentos, loaded that thing up the best we could, and then took everything out of that and put it in the new Optima sedan. And the Optima took everything in just fine. And then more importantly, you could then close the trunk. So you had the security of everything locked away as well. So the modern sedan, really for most families, is probably much more than they expect. And we just want to point that out as being a consideration before, again, you just kind of blindly run off and say, oh, I need an SUV because that's what everybody's getting these days.
Well, let's go ahead. I'll just go ahead and lay out the competition for our listeners here, because I guess it's the Ford Explorer that you're really competing against. They've had this huge explosion with especially millennials this year. Is that the crowd that you're after, the millennials, or are you going more after the families?
Anybody and everybody. Okay. I mean, yeah, the Explorer's done well. There's fantastic products from Toyota, from Chevrolet, from you know, this just the industry is really focused on that crossover space in both sides, the midsize and the much smaller ones. In fact, we've even seen more heat in the smaller crossover space, more of the, you know, the four cylinder, five passenger variety. But no, it's what we just think people should do is before they go shopping, just kind of push the pause button for a second and say, okay, am I going shopping for a vehicle like the Explorer or a Toyota RAV4 or a Honda Pilot or something of that nature because that's the fashion? Or is it what I really need in my life? And we just think that many people would be really utterly shocked by what today's modern sedan would offer them. And it's more than just the cargo space. You've also got a much smaller passenger space, not smaller necessarily, but more kind of defined passenger space. So the ride's going to be quieter. You're going to get better fuel efficiency because you're lower to the ground, more aerodynamic. You're not pushing a box down the road. So you're going to be getting better natural aerodynamics and better fuel efficiency. You know, more of a luxurious driving experience as opposed to that utility type experience. And so, you know, we're not saying that a sedan is going to be better for every family or every individual, but we think that a sedan should be considered before you just, as I say, kind of blindly run off and put yourself in line for some of these hot vehicles.
For those of us who don't blindly go off, we do check several reports, like, for instance, J.D. Power is one of them. Edmunds is another.
Yeah.
What are those organizations saying about Kia?
Well, you mentioned J.D. Power earlier. We had some very fantastic news from them. You know, the IQS study is something J.D. Power has been doing for the last 31 years. The first 4 years of the study, the winner was Toyota. The last 27 years of the study, it's been a combination of Lexus, Mercedes, BMW, other luxury brands. This year, it was big news that it was a non-luxury brand that won this award. It got even bigger than anybody could expect when it turned out that vehicle line, was Kia. And so, yeah, Kia was the winner of the J.D. Power IQS award this year. It was surprised a lot of people in the industry, but it wasn't to us. We, as a company, about 10 years ago, put a focus on improving how we are seen in the industry and by consumers. For a very long time, Kia was seen, and when I say very long time, we've only been in this market for about 21 years, so not that long. But Kia was kind of seen as an alternative to a used car. You know, somebody's saying, well, I don't really want to put a new set of tires on the old car, or that transmission starting to make that noise again. Maybe it's time to get something new. My budget can't quite stretch into new car territory, so, well, let's get used. But, you know, gosh, I'd really like to have that new car smell, a warranty. I guess I have to look at Kia. That's kind of where Kia had established itself. Again, 10 years ago, the company said, enough of that. We're going to bring in some new hot designers from across the industry, a new focus on quality, on durability, on fuel efficiency, new facilities here in America to make these products. And all that kind of came together as a perfect storm this year. So we're really quite proud of the J.D. Power Award.
Well, let's hit on a couple of things first. Let's talk about the technology that's in the cars, because I know that for people who are buying some of the other vehicles like Ford, the Ford Explorer, that's a big deal that there is some new technology in those vehicles. How are you comparing with those competitors in that area?
Extremely well. In fact, the IQS study, when you look at the study itself, if you studied the study, so to speak, that IQS, a lot of the quality scoring does kind of seem to bounce up against the technology space. And what we found is that those manufacturers that have technology for technology's sake, if you will, they have some really cool kind of cutting edge infotainment or connectivity, equipment on board. If they're not easy to use, if people kind of struggle to understand how it can really integrate nicely into their life and make them safer in their driving experience, then it turns out often being noted in the quality surveys as being bad quality, which isn't fair. It's just not easy to use, so people don't use it. And they end up grabbing their phone to get directions or look up information as opposed to using the technologies there in the car, which, again, is much safer. Where Kia is doing very well is that our connectivity systems there are easy to use. They become very intuitive, very simple, but very direct. I mean, even just like the voice activated navigation system, you push the button and say you want to go to 123 Main Street, that vehicle is going to understand that and plug that into the navigation system and start to direct you there. There's not this, I said Main Street, not King Street or something like that. And so that's, I think, one of the places that we did very, very well. Our technology is very, very strong and, more importantly, easy to use, which makes that drive much safer.
And let's talk about the price point. What are we up against in terms of price versus price?
Well, Kia's perspective, as I said earlier, from how it was 10 years ago, kind of being that used car alternative, knew that it always wanted to be one of those brands that over-delivered on value. On the equipment that's available, the technology, the comfort, the luxury features, but do it at a very fair price. And that's where we've continued to shine. I mean, when you look at the comparable, say, Explorer to Kia Sorento, you're looking at, a vehicle that might have the same level of equipment or even higher for a couple thousand dollars less. And that's exactly how we position it. Then you add on top of that our amazing 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty and better fuel efficiency. It becomes a very smart buy. But again, that's not what Kia is all about now. We're also about aspiration and having products that, I mean, when you build a car, if you and I decided to start a car company, we've got to bend the sheet metal. So we might as well make it look good. And that's what this company is really focused on, too. There's now a sense of, again, aspiration connected to the brands, plugged in with the fact that you're also saving a couple thousand dollars at retail.
James Bell, the Director of Corporate Communications at Kia, you have convinced me to take a look at Kia the next time I look at a vehicle.
Well, hey, take a look at whatever's smart for your family and your personal day-to-day needs. That's really the message I want to get across.
All right, James. Thanks for getting up with us this morning on the Opening Bell. Again, James Bell at Kia with a look at the crossover craze and Kia's offering to that, maybe an alternative at Kia.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:50 again at the WGN Market Desk. Top story this morning, Home Depot reporting earnings and revenue that fell roughly in line with Wall Street's estimates as the world's largest home improvement retailer continued to reap benefits of a strong housing market. Lots of people also out doing repairs and home improvement in the last quarter. Home Depot reporting earnings of $1.97 per share. And that is in line with what estimates had suggested just a day or so ago. Wall Street forecast at $26.4 billion was the revenue, and they came in at $26.49 billion in revenue. So right there along the lines. on the markets this morning. Dow futures pointing toward a lower open on Wall Street. Looks like the rally has hit its wall. The S&P and NASDAQ also lower this morning as we move toward the opening bell. Let's get the latest on commodities. Good morning, Ari and Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, looking back to that crop report of last Friday, it looks like much of it had already been traded in the market. Because, again, we started the week yesterday with soybean futures up 2.8%, their biggest daily gain in more than 3 weeks, and strong export demand, along with a rally in the soybean oil market, where supplies apparently tightened, helped push the bean market higher. Gains in beans pulled corn higher. Wheat, however, closed lower as traders locked in profits from early gains. But soybeans showed the biggest daily gain in percentage terms since July 12th. And at the end of the day, the November contract was up 27.25 cents. December corn was up a nickel a bushel, wheat down 1.5. And make it 2 in a row for lean hog futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Second consecutive session of a higher market, thanks to stronger cash and wholesale pork prices. That wholesale pork price went up $3.27 from Friday in yesterday's trade. And the pork belly price up almost $16 per hundredweight. All of that helped lean hogs end the day higher, while cattle ended the day lower. Well, it's a big day today in Springfield at the Illinois State Fair. I'll be down there for a salute to agriculture, the farm families of Illinois. The salute to agriculture breakfast at 10 a.m. and then at 4 p.m., the governor's auction of Grand Champion commodities and livestock. Looking for a good day at the fair, and I guess things have pretty much dried out since the torrential rains of the weekend. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. Get a something on a stick for all of us while you're down there. A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning. First of all, Google Chat has introduced its new video chatting app. The app, dubbed Duo, represents Google's response to other popular video calling options, including FaceTime and Skype, also Facebook's Messenger app. Duo isn't much different from those other services, except it does give you a glimpse at who is making the call, helping the recipient decide whether to answer Google's call. They're calling this feature Knock Knock. The new app, announced in May, being released today as a free service for phones running on the Google Android operating system, as well as Apple iPhones. Like FaceTime for iPhones, Duo only requires a person's phone number to connect. Many other services require both participants to log into their video calling options and share email and other information. Another big story we'll be following for you today in the world of aviation. The U.S. Aviation regulators have upgraded Indonesia's safety rating, clearing the way for the airline to fly to North America after nearly a decade of being barred. Federal Aviation Administration says its reassessment completed in March finds that safety oversight by Indonesia's civil authority, aviation authority, complied with international standards. A statement the government issued yesterday means that the airlines get necessary approval can fly to the U.S. and code share with U.S. airlines, probably starting sometime later this year.